Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
So what are we supposed to do about that, as Russia might be now winning that war, with Ukraine needing more help? Not boots on the ground, they're willing to do the fighting themselves, but more military help. What about Israel and the myriad threats that they face? Of course, there's Taiwan as well. How is the House going to deal with this? Let's ask Republican Congressman Dan Crenshaw of Texas, too, and he's here with us. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, guys. Always good to be with you.
Well, it's another sort of dysfunctional moment in the House of Representatives where it's kind of unclear what the path forward is going to be. I saw that there's another member of your conference that has signed on to this idea of a motion to vacate, meaning throwing Speaker Johnson out of the job. I know most of your colleagues disagree with that. We can maybe unpack the Johnson drama in a second, but on foreign policy, Ukraine, Israel, etc., plus questions about the border, where do you come down on this? How do you see this being resolved?
Well, it's going to get resolved a certain way. It may not have been my favorite way. My favorite way was package it all together and use that as leverage for some serious reforms on border, specifically in the asylum process. And the reason I always advocated for that was because if Trump becomes president and wins, his Achilles heel was always the asylum loopholes. And that's exactly what we need to reform in law. There are liars out there on the right who say we don't need any new laws, who say that, you know, it's just a matter of presidential discretion. They're liars. And they have to answer for that and answer why we bothered passing HR 2. So that was my preferred method. That's not the method that's going to happen. What's going to happen is we're going to vote on each of these supplementals separately, and then it gets packaged into one thing that gets sent to the Senate. Now, if any one of those fails, then, of course, it doesn't make it into the package. And so there's going to be Ukraine, there's going to be Taiwan, there's going to be Israel, and there's going to be a fourth package that I don't have text for, but it's more of a Republican package. It'll have pay fors, for instance, take Russian assets, use that to pay for Ukraine. It'll make the Ukraine aid a loan, which is President Trump's idea and, frankly, quite a good one. And I believe, again, I haven't seen it because it's not out yet, I believe require rights to, you know, mineral deposits in Ukraine, things like that. And so that's the state of play. Will all of those things pass? I think there's a pretty decent chance that they all pass. As you just noted, the vast majority of Americans still think this is a good idea, still think that we shouldn't let dictators take over and subjugate and enslave other countries around the world, take their resources, control their economies, and basically upend the world order that Americans have enjoyed for the past 80 years in a post-World War II era. I think most people understand the strategic importance of that, and that your children will have a lower per capita income, will have a lesser quality of life if America is not in charge of the global economy the way we have been for the last 75 years. That's the why it matters to you answer. And to get there, you have to make Russia regret it. And you need this aid package to give enough bullets and enough equipment to Ukrainians who are willing to fight, so that they can make Russia regret it. And we know when Russia regrets it, when they're actually coming to the table for a peace deal. They're not there yet. Putin has zero interest in a peace deal right now because he thinks he can still keep going. And he has to change that dynamic. And it is a changeable dynamic. I just walked out of a briefing with, you know, senior intelligence and defense officials. And there is a change in the way we're doing these aid packages. Better weapons, better strategy, so that it doesn't last forever, so that Ukrainians can stand on their own 2 feet. There is an end game to this, but it does not have to be forever stalemate.
So you have certain colleagues of yours that represent a certain element, certainly the Republican base, that say they don't want another dime for Ukraine, that they demonize Ukraine in some ways that I always find a bit bizarre. Some of their arguments and critiques are more nuanced and thoughtful than that. But you have at least a certain fringe saying if more Ukraine funding is passed or there's something that we don't like that comes out of this, well, then the next step is to dethrone Speaker Johnson and throw the House Republican conference back into just total tumult. We went through this already once. That was not in a presidential election year. I cannot imagine that Donald Trump is interested in this happening in his election year, but you at least have a couple members saying that they're willing to do it, and it only takes a few, Congressman. Is this a real threat to a majority that's already hanging by a thread?
Yeah, if you want to call it a majority. That's not the way we
act. Technical, I mean, nominal majority.
Yeah, but of course it's a problem. And it should be said that there's nothing patriotic or principled about this stance to remove Johnson. Remove Johnson for what? For engaging in the process of democracy where we get to vote on issues that the majority of Americans actually want? That's a pretty wild position to take. And it's a narcissistic one. Let's be clear on that. It's a very narcissistic one because it's implying that the will of everyone else is lesser than yours, right? Like their priorities mean less than yours. Somehow you have some secret access to what is perfect and what is the will of the people. I know I've always won an argument when somebody uses that against me. Oh, well, you're just against the will of the people. I'm sorry, but you don't represent the will of the people. Nobody does. Nobody represents the entirety of the will of the people. The entire point of politics is to debate these things. And if you don't have good arguments for your position, then just stop. Then just stop debating me. You've lost. And so that's what those kind of antics tell me, that they've lost the ability to debate on the merits. And so they present these antics that, frankly, are, again, you just stated the polling before you had me on. That are indeed are against the will of the people, which is ironic considering that's their argument.
And yet, I mean, you could have, whether it's the will of the people or a will of a person or two, if you get two or three or four of them who've decided that Mike Johnson has betrayed the cause or whatever, then what? Then who? Like, is there any plan?
Then Republicans just prove once and for all that we shouldn't govern. I mean, that's the unfortunate, that's the political consequence of that. If you're asking what the policy consequence of that is for Ukraine, the reality is what would likely happen is the discharge petition from the Senate bill would just pass.
That's what
would happen.
So the Democrats would basically say, hey, we want to vote on the Senate bill. There are enough Republicans who agree with them that would say, yep, we agree, so they can then force that onto the floor and just totally defang Republican leadership entirely. The thing's going to pass. I mean, what's the answer? What's the answer to Johnson's critics and others saying, well, we can't betray our voters with X, Y, and Z? It's like, well, here comes a discharge petition if we don't. Is there a response to that?
Yeah, I mean, you outlined it pretty well. The reality is, that despite their grandstanding about defending Republican principles, in reality, their actions would result in a bill that Republicans didn't like. That is 100% what would happen. That's so often the case, by the way. Like, let's just remove it from this particular policy discussion. But it's so often the case with these kind of antics that we see, these sort of burn the house down kind of antics. They never result in more conservative wins. Never. Nobody can ever point to any situation where they've ever resulted in more conservative wins. You get conservative wins by being smart and, look, adhering to principles and having a mature and reasonable understanding of the political reality that you live in. You have to accept reality for what it is. You have to know what your majorities are, how slim they are. You have to know who controls the Senate. You have to know who controls the White House. Right? These are simple issues of political reality, and there are those who refuse to believe them. So that makes their strategy quite stupid because it's not based in reality, even if we agree with their philosophy sometimes. But that philosophy has to be applied to reality.
Well, I mean, if the goal, though, is to get attention and make sure that they'll never be outflanked on their right in a crimson-red district, in their own narrow sense, it might make sense for them. It does not make sense, I would say, for the broader movement or the party or governance or anything like that, which goes back to sort of the selfish, narcissistic point that you were making. I do want to ask you about another topic, which is FISA and the reform on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. I know that this is another one that has divided Republicans to some extent. You've made the case that the new bill with reforms is good, and that some safeguards are in place, because a lot of conservatives are understandably upset about abuses in the past. And others say you can't trust these people at all. We've seen certainly the progressive left coming out against the bill as well, some strange bedfellows there. Make your argument, if you would, to this audience about the FISA reform that you support.
Yeah, of course. So first, it's important for people to understand what FISA is. It's our ability to spy on foreign adversaries that happen to be using our American-owned telecommunications. So it's quite the tool. Of course, you have to be careful with that. And even if you want to spy on foreigners in foreign lands, you still need a warrant, and there's a warrant process for that. It has been abused in the past, and maybe I don't think Republican leadership did a great job simply publishing for all news outlets the 56 reforms that were put in there. These reforms, from a national security perspective, from a guy who tracks terrorists or did it in his past life, you might argue these reforms actually went too far. You could easily argue that there will be severely less analysis done and dots connected because of these reforms. But my answer to that is also, hey, too bad, FBI. Like, you abused the program too many times. We have too many examples. It made people very angry. So there are 56 very serious reforms that were passed into this. It doesn't get talked about enough. A lot of them were directed exactly at the situation that President Trump found himself in with Frostfire Hurricane, preventing that from ever happening again, making sure that people aren't just, get a slap on the wrist when they screw this up, but that they go to jail. And these reforms are significant. It reduced the FBI's access to the FISA query program by 90%. They're really upset about that, trust me. So it's not as if there was no reforms. The main argument last week is over whether you should have a warrant to even search the database. And what I explained to people is, look, FISA is basically a wiretap on people we already have a warrant for, mostly foreign adversaries. You always know what the other side of that conversation is when you have a wiretap, right? And, we've done this for decades. You don't pretend you don't hear the other side of that wiretap. The only difference between that and FISA is FISA is a searchable database. And by the way, you can't just search anyone for any reason. You can't just search any U.S. citizen in it for any reason. You have to have very specific guards in place. And we put a ton of reforms in place to make sure that it's actually quite difficult to do that. And the reasoning has to be at a very high standard and audited and transparent, all of it. And so that was the main rub, because if you do require a warrant for the simple search, I promise you, here's what's going to happen. You could still collect on foreigners in foreign lands, but you'll never connect the dots when they're trying to plan a terrorist attack inside the U.S. What's the point of terrorists? They want to plan a terrorist attack inside the U.S. I don't really care what they're doing in Syria. What I care about is who they're talking to inside the United States and why. And so people, there was a massive misunderstanding of what FISA is, and that was the main rub. I also want to point out, 83 Republicans voted against my amendment, by the way, to include collection on cartels. And again, cartels in foreign lands, cartels in Mexico, and companies in China that make precursor chemicals, knowingly sending them to fentanyl producers in Mexico. We cannot even apply for a warrant on them. My amendment simply changed that, updated it, given the fentanyl crisis we find ourselves in. Luckily, it passed, by the way, but it only passed because more Democrats voted for it than Republicans. I can't even believe that. 83 Republicans voted to protect Chinese precursor producers and protect cartels from American surveillance. That's what happened that week. People need to be very clear about that. And I think it stems from a massive misunderstanding of what the FISA program is. In the end, I think we're in a very good place with a lot of really good reforms, and I think that's what the takeaway should be.
Well, there's a lot on the plate of the House of Representatives and a lot of internal strife and maneuvering within the nominal Republican majority, and we'll see where all of it goes playing out in the coming days and certainly ahead of November as well, when the complexion and the power balance will likely shift one way or another when voters have their say. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, Republican of Texas, the 2nd District down there, is our guest on The Guy Benson Show. Congressman, thanks for your time. We'll talk again soon.
All right, thanks, Guy.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.